Have you done your taxes yet? Early filers have been seeing smaller returns this year, but those numbers have slowly been going back up. The more people file, and with some changes to the tax laws, maybe this is the year you just go ahead and hire somebody else to file your taxes for you. CBS business analyst Jill Schlesinger says, don't go crazy.
It really is interesting because I know a lot of people are kind of freaking out, but if you methodically go through the process and you've got some tax planning software, you should be fine. In fact, one of the interesting parts of the tax reform is that more people will be able to claim the standard deduction. Remember that you either can do it itemized deductions or standard deductions, which kind of knocks money off your tax bill. And when you do itemized, you have to sort of count up all these different preference items. And maybe that's state and local tax. Maybe that's your mortgage interest. Maybe it's your charitable contributions. But if you claim the standard deduction, which the Treasury thinks about 90% of Americans will actually claim the standard deduction, it shouldn't be that hard. So don't freak yourself out. Don't be talking to yourself in your brain, getting all nervous. It's pretty similar to last year in that you will need to actually gather up all your documents, but then walk through the process slowly and steadily. You'll be fine.
Oh, good. It's always calming to talk to you about that. You know, you hear some horror stories out there about, you usually get a return and now you're owing something and you're thinking, where did I go wrong?
Well, you may not have gone wrong, but what you may not have realized is that when the tax law went into effect, the government changed the IRS withholding tables. So you work at a job and your employer holds back some money out of each paycheck for your taxes, right? And what you may not have realized is that amount changed as of the beginning of calendar year 2018. Now, for some people, they didn't notice the change. It could have been $10 a paycheck, $500 over the course of a year. And if you didn't notice that, and all of a sudden you ended up filing and say, oh my gosh, my refund is $500, $800 lower than it was last year. What you may not have realized is that part of the money you got back from the government was simply that you didn't withhold as much, you didn't owe as much, and you got that money throughout last year. And without understanding that, you might come into this tax season saying, hey, this tax thing, this stinks. I didn't get as much money, but you may have already gotten part of it at least.
So the withholding is something you're going to want to look at right now for next year.
That's right. And by the way, the IRS has a great tool, irs.gov, and they've got a withholding tool that will go through and ask a series of questions. Are you a single filer? Are you a joint filer? And it will help you estimate how much money you need to withhold in the current year. And please, yes, do that right now because you don't want to have the exact same problem next year.
And along the lines of advice, you've got some great tips for first-time home buyers, especially for this year, 2019.
Yeah, I mean, this is such a weird year because last year at the end of the year, you might remember that we saw mortgage rates increase pretty dramatically. Well, they've come back down. And so now what we know is that mortgage rates are back down, wages are up. And so that means that, we're hoping that there's more inventory that comes online and many more first-time buyers are coming into the market. Now, what we also know is first-time home buyers, not the smartest group. They tend to pay up. They pay over asking more than everybody else. Mm-hmm. They tend to not shop around for mortgages when they really should. So when you go into this process, the most important part of it is to run the numbers for yourself. Don't rely on a mortgage company saying, hey, Colleen, I've got great news. You qualify for a $400,000 mortgage. Well, just because you qualify for it doesn't mean you should actually take it. Maybe really in your life, it would be better for you to have a $300,000 mortgage because that's what you could better afford. So run the numbers for you and your family. And I think that one other little reminder is that, anyone who owns a home can tell you this. You probably don't believe it. It's sort of like childbirth that you don't believe everything you hear. This one you should believe. And that is when you buy a house, there's ongoing maintenance. And what you should figure into your pricing when you're running your numbers is that 1% to 3% of your purchase price, you should count on spending that every single year just for the upkeep of your home.
Jill, that hits close to home. Not only am I less than 2 months away from giving birth, but I also have a list of home maintenance projects to get done before she arrives.
Oh, brother, you're going to be busy, girl.
I know, exactly. But that's definitely good advice, although I don't know where in this region we're going to find a home for $300,000.
Well, yeah, listen, you can find a home for $400,000 and maybe that you put down 100. I don't know. You're going to have to do that yourselves. And I know that in many markets, including yours, that the market is very difficult. So don't jump in before you can really afford it. It really is better to rent for, you know, and build up your down payment fund. Don't take on more than you really can swallow when it comes down to a house.
CBS business analyst Jill Schlesinger. Right now, we want to talk local laws. Washington State used to have some of the most lax DUI laws in the nation. And there have been some improvements. Repeat DUI offenders are still a big issue in our state, though. There's a bill in Olympia that would help change that, but the clock is ticking to get it passed. Hannah, I remember you covering when we updated our DUIs last session.
It was, in 2017.
It took a long time to get even that. So how could we, again, advance this year?
So, yeah, and just to remind everybody, back in 2017, after like 4 years of trying, we made a fourth DUI a felony in our state. Forever, it was five DUIs before you got a felony, which was the most lax in the country. So right now, though, we still hear all of these stories despite that new law, right? We had one guy a couple of weekends ago in Seattle with his eighth DUI over the summer last year in the Arlington area. We had that other person who had 4 to 6 DUI convictions who went down the highway the wrong way, I-5 the wrong way, and killed that woman from Oregon. Mm-hmm. In all of those cases, people ask me, why are these drivers still behind the wheel? Well, part of that reason is because those DUIs that they have in the past all fall outside of what is known as the look back period. So what that is the 10 years that you can, that the courts can look back to your priors to make that, to get to that felony mark, right? And it's just not happening right now, according to Amy Friedham, who is with the King County Prosecutor's Office.
DUI offenders are savvy, and so they're delaying the conviction of their prior DUIs. So they spread them out so that their last one times out. And that's why extending the look back would help us, because we have people who are just not making the felony DUI mark.
So the DUI offenders are actually extending the judicial process?
There are a variety of things you can do to delay when that conviction actually goes on your record. And that's what she's referencing there. So lawmakers are considering a bill from Republican Senator Mike Patton that would extend that look back period from 10 years to 15 years and hopefully get more of those habitual offenders off the streets.
How about just always?
No, I know. And there are a couple of states.
Why are we even letting people have four DUIs?
No, and I understand. And so there's an answer to that, and it's cost is the large part of the reason. So originally this bill from Senator Patton would have extended the look back period to 25 years. By the time it came out of Ways and Means a few weeks ago, it had been pared down to just this 15 years. James McMahon with the Washington Association of Sheriffs and Police Chiefs told a Senate committee, anything will help.
The folks that we're talking about here have a long history of repeated drunk drivingness that we can catch them at. There's good data that shows for every drunk driver that we catch, they've had several instances where they've driven impaired that we don't catch them. These are perhaps the most dangerous hazards on our roads. We totally get that housing, particularly drunk drivers, housing offenders in incarceration is incredibly expensive. That's a challenge that you all have. We get it. We understand it. Whatever help you all can provide for us in making our roads safer, we certainly appreciate it.
So again, it's that cost of making more people have to do prison, because that the felony mark, that means that you're going to prison. Whereas a lot of times when it's a misdemeanor, you can get deferred or sent to treatment and various other stuff. The courts order you to go to treatment, but it's up to the person when you're dealing with a misdemeanor to follow through on that on their own. So anyway, this bill could die. It needs to be passed within the next 3 days before the Wednesday cutoff in order to proceed at just that 15-year look back period and hopefully get some of those habitual offenders off the street.
How bad are DUIs in Washington State?
Overall, alcohol-only related DUIs have actually been on the decline. So the repeat DUI offenders, they're really a small percentage. I think out of 687 DUI drivers, only 91% had priors. But the scary statistic is that 6 DUIs, 67 times more likely to be involved in a fatal crash when we're talking about repeat offenders, someone with a prior.
So they will keep doing it until they kill.
Yeah. And also, I want to point out another thing that the King County Prosecutor's Office told me is what they're seeing is combined alcohol and other substance DUIs are much on the rise and also involved in fatal crashes. A lot of people with booze and pot in their system is what they're seeing. And a lot of those people who are smoking weed are saying that they feel like it's going to make them drive better after drinking.
It'll
That's what they
the
said.
Edge. Oh,
yeah.
Boy. Yeah.
Not true, they say, by the way.
A lot of education needed there.
Seattle's Morning News. This is Dave Ross with Colleen O'Brien. Let's discuss the golfer's dilemma to walk or use the cart. And let's discuss it with the doctor.
Agent Dr. Cohen.
Dr. Gordon Cohen, MD. Dr. Cohen, this comes up with people who love to play golf, but notice that their knees aren't what they used to be. They're suffering from arthritis. And they think, well, if my knees are telling me no, I should ride in the cart.
You know, I think people are often worried that if they have osteoarthritis and they're going to continue to play golf, then the best thing for them to do is to ride the golf cart and not walk the course anymore. But it turns out that that's not true. There was actually a study that was recently presented at the Association of Academic Physiatrists. They were from Northwestern University School of Medicine, so a very prominent medical school in the country. They want to know, well, what were the health benefits of walking the course versus riding in the cart? And so they actually took a group of people who had osteoarthritis, and they had them either walk the course or ride the carts, and then a week later they switched. So what they found was interesting. There's actually significant cardiovascular benefits from the aerobic activity that's associated with walking the course. They looked at the golfer's step count, their heart rate, their rating of perceived exertion, but they also looked at their pain score during the golf round. And then they did something unique is they collected blood and serum samples at the ninth hole and then at the 18th hole. And then they tested these samples for what are called biomarkers, you know, blood markers of osteoarthritis and signs of inflammation. What they found was people were getting significantly more exercise if they walked the course, which is not really surprising.
No.
The thing is this, that one of the primary recommendations for people who have osteoarthritis is that they actually do more exercise, that they do walk more, and they do keep their joints moving. Walking the course actually can cause an increase in inflammation, and in fact, the researchers found that the inflammatory markers did go up. However, there were long-term benefits derived from the exercise for their joints.
I'm surprised any golfer would allow someone to follow them around the course with a needle and draw their blood after nine holes. But in other words, so just because usually I thought the whole purpose of pain was your body telling you, hey, don't do this. But if you're saying it's okay to walk through the pain and eventually that will help you?
It's actually true. In a typical round of golf, players walk about 5 miles, but people with arthritis tend to find themselves struggling after two or three, and they can't really finish an 18-hole round because they're suffering from too much pain. But physicians who study this and actually treat it have tried to encourage their patients to play through. So, for example, players can successfully learn how to adapt their swing. You know, it's recommended that you perform a warm-up before stepping onto the first tee. You know, stretch your hamstrings, loosen your shoulders, flexing your groin area. These all help warm up the muscles. And then a few minutes of gentle twisting and bending activity will ease some of the stiffness that they find later on. Also, golfers with osteoarthritis can try and adapt their gear. You know, people are often playing with clubs that have very stiff shafts. A club shaft with more, you know, whip in it will make hitting and getting the ball in the air a lot easier. Now, with new kinds of materials, if you pick more lightweight clubs, you'll have less weight to carry around. And, you know, also you can use electric trolleys that you can put your clubs in, and that'll create less strain on your shoulder and your back joints. So there are other adaptations that players can make so that they can continue to walk and get the benefits of exercise while they play golf and not have to give it up altogether.
Yeah. I've heard golf described as a nice walk ruined, but as long as you're moving, then it does your arthritis some good. Is it wise to use painkillers on a regular basis if you have that kind of arthritis so that you don't feel it during the game, or is that dangerous?
There's no danger to it other than the inherent risks of taking these types of medications, whether you're playing golf or not playing golf. Mm-hmm. But you know, if it can help you to get the benefits of the exercise, then by all means, you should be doing it.
Where do you come down in the debate over whether golf is a sport or not?
Well, I think it absolutely is a sport, and it's a sport that all people can play. And I think one of the things is that golf is really so challenging, and you can never perfect it. And so that's what I think keeps people coming back more and more and more.
And your message is, don't let your arthritis stop you from pursuing it.
Don't let your arthritis stop you from pursuing it. And in fact, you know, playing golf can actually help your arthritis, because if you walk the course, you're going to get the benefits of exercise from both a cardiovascular standpoint and the effects of exercising your osteoarthritic joints.
Dr. Gordon Cohen, MD. Dr. Cohen, thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
The crash of a Boeing jet, an Ethiopian Airlines flight, fell from the sky moments after takeoff yesterday. The black boxes have been recovered. What we do know, this is the second crash of a Boeing 737 MAX 8 in less than 5 months. So let's bring in aviation industry analyst Richard Abulafia with the Teal Group. These were both essentially new planes, which is what makes this sort of surprising, Richard.
Yeah, that's right. Very sad day indeed. And unfortunately, it does bear so far, given the limited amount that we know about this particular crash, it does bear a resemblance to the Lion Air disaster back in September, I believe. So there's a lot of concern out there.
Absolutely. And you study these issues every day. Does it make you worried about flying in a MAX 8? Some airlines have declined to stop flying them.
Yeah, you know, I mean, ultimately, I do trust the safety regulators, and I would follow their guidelines, and they know exactly what's going on with the situation. Hopefully, we'll learn an awful lot more, though, in the next few days. But I would follow their guidance at the end of the day.
Richard, Chris here. Just, you know, you look at Renton and you look at the ramp up of production up to 52 jets a month, and you look at some of the supply issues last year. It seems like it could be easy to point at a lot of things, but we don't have a lot of information.
Yeah, you know, that's right. I mean, we really know nothing. I think the worst case scenario, of course, is that it resembles what happened, or that it is the same as what happened to the Lion Air crash, in which case it's less about production and more about software and training. And, you know, implementing fixes with both of those could be expensive. But on the other hand, no one here is talking about this design, this model being fundamentally flawed somehow, and therefore a complete disaster for Boeing. It's a sad day. It might result in expensive changes, but at the end of the day, you're not going to see anything change with the commercial reality of the program.
And what about maybe not the plane itself, but the automation system? That was the issue, it seems, with the Lion Air crash, that it was in some sort of an autopilot that the pilots say they were not entirely trained on. It took a nosedive. This one, they're using the phrase nosedive shortly after takeoff. Could this be another pilot training issue?
Yeah, it could be, or it could be something to do with the interface between the sensors and the MCAS system, or it could be something to do with, you know, the override system for the MCAS. There are any number of possibilities, but all of them, once they find out what's going on here, they can deal with it. This is not something that speaks to the basic nature of the aircraft itself. But, you know, it's psychologically a bit of a blow, could be a reputational blow. Certainly there could be some, you know, financial, it could be expensive. But at the end of the day, I have no doubt that the 737 MAX will recover and they'll still be able to make this program a commercial success and a technical success, too.
You know, Richard, to go back to production again, I mean, I know, you know, how long you've looked at this, but even though, you know, with my years of covering aviation, anytime, you know, it just seems like 52 and maybe up to 57 planes a month from that factory, it just seems like so much. Can you kind of put that in perspective? The layman is like, okay, it's real, you know, they can handle it. These planes are coming out fine, but it just seems like an awful lot of airplanes coming out of that plant a month.
You know, it is. And, you know, take you back a while. I think it might have been 15 years ago. Carolyn Corvey was running the program, and she was quoted in a recent book by Kevin Michaels that even going from rate 21 would be a stretch. And she said, well, why can't we? And, of course, they could, and they did. And they've been pumping out 737s at a remarkable pace for some time. 52 sounds like a lot, but, you know, they've been getting near that level for some time, or in the 40s at least. And 57 shouldn't be a stretch. There's talk of rate 70 out there, you know, among the suppliers. I don't think that will happen, but it's not inconceivable. But I think the thing to remember is that if this is a worst-case scenario, that this really is a repeat of the tragedy with Lion Air, I don't think it's anything to do with the cadence of production. It's a training issue, perhaps a software issue, but nothing to do with the kind of quality control issues that you associate with production.
Aviation industry analyst Richard Abulafia with the Teal Group. We appreciate your time, Richard.
My pleasure.
And Boeing did release a statement, too, passing along their sympathies, saying a Boeing technical team will be traveling to the crash site to provide assistance under the direction of Ethiopia Accident Investigation Bureau and the U.S. National Transportation Safety Board. Their stocks declined more than 11% this morning at the opening. It's down now about 7.5%, so recovering slightly, but they're going to take a brief hit because of this crash. Sully, do me a favor. Just poke me with a stick every once in a while to make sure I'm paying attention.
Yeah,
right?
You do the same. I've got toothpicks holding up my eyelids, a la Bugs Bunny.
This daylight saving thing is the pits. We are all struggling to stay. If you're not, well, don't let me know, because I don't want to know that you're doing fine. We're all struggling together this morning because of moving, springing forward an hour. And this could be the last year we have to do this, because there is movement on a bill that would do away with this time change once and for all. And Cairo Radio's Hannah Scott is following this noble endeavor. Hannah?
Okay, Colleen. So there are a couple of bills in Olympia to move us to year-round daylight saving time. And one took a very big step forward over the weekend, actually just hours before our clocks were set to jump ahead. The House passed a bill from Democratic Representative Marcus Riccielli.
I came to the bill from a healthcare angle. We see an uptick in car collisions, strokes, heart attacks, and I think this bill makes good sense. Kids can be healthier and more active outside later. And we're already on daylight savings time 8 months of the year. And so I just think it makes sense. People are tired. They want to ditch the switch and move in this direction.
So we would stay with this time right now and not fall back.
Okay. Yes. So it would be later. I'm sorry, lighter later in the day and then darker early, longer in the morning.
So say they did get approval from Congress on this, we would stay at this time and never touch the clocks again.
That is correct.
The current time it's at right now.
Yes.
Got it.
I don't know that the Congress will act that soon, but I'll get to that. So at any rate, he says there are also studies that show that this can cut down on crime, mm-hmm. also have benefits for commerce. Now, while some people did raise concerns about it staying dark later in the morning, especially because of kids walking to school in the dark, which Ellie says overwhelmingly the support has been for year-round daylight saving time rather than year-round permanent standard time. And that was clear on the House floor Saturday when the House voted overwhelmingly to approve this 89-7 with Republican Matt Shea leading the cheering squad.
Not only is this good for our health, is this good for our commerce, but this bill actually may be indeed good for America.
It was met with cheers. Everybody was having a good time. In
it's
fact,
been a long time since I've heard Matt Shea on something he got cheers for.
I know. They actually didn't have this on the floor calendar. They took a quick break because I was watching over the weekend, and they pulled it specifically, I think, because it was just hours before the times were going to the clock was going to spring forward. So
they need a win.
And Rosalie said as soon as they started this discussion, they really, because there were some other bills that would have made it permanent standard time, which the state could do without congressional approval, one. But he said really overwhelmingly they all heard from constituents the support for the daylight saving time year-round.
Some people prefer permanent standard time. Some people prefer permanent daylight savings time. What's just clear is that people are ready to stop switching back and forth.
Mm-hmm. Right? No, whatever we do, let's keep it the same all year long. And he stressed, though, the idea here behind this is that Washington is not alone.
There was interest particularly increased when we saw that California passed a proposition in the legislature, that Oregon's introduced measures. Idaho has looked at a resolution to say we'll do it with the rest of the time zone. So, yeah, really the intent is to see if we can get action on our whole time zone.
So, again, this would require federal action, congressional approval. There are a couple of different bills, too. So his passed the House.
Why? Why does it need Congress to approve?
That goes back to something in the 50s, the Uniform Time Act, right? They have to align, sign off on everything for federal reasons. I don't have a solid answer.
As each state revolts against this time change, they have to approve that on an individual basis.
And again, to switch to daylight saving year round, we do. But he told me that if we wanted to, again, keep it permanent, like wintertime all year long, for whatever reason, our state could do that on their own. So I'm not exactly sure on the specifics there. But for daylight saving year round, we have to get the congressional approval.
And what's the temperature in Congress for approving
so
that?
So I just heard, so he had told me that Patty Murray had expressed interest in our bill here in our state. Starting that federal conversation. So I checked with her office and they just got back to me this morning. Senator Murray says she's glad this bill passed the House and plans to work with her colleagues on next steps at the federal level to make sure federal policies are working for Washington State. Super committal.
She's going to bring everyone to the table to make sure all voices are heard before they weigh in on this.
Florida Senator.
I'm too tired to put up with that answer.
Marco Rubio introduced or pre-filed, I believe, last week, a bill that he will reintroduce this week that would move the set the national standard to all year daylight saving time. So maybe that has some legs as well. We'll see.
It's got to. Where do you come down on this?
I would love it for to be lighter in the afternoon.
So you would stay with this time.
I like this. Yeah.
Stay
I like
you,
it.
Sully.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
More time for baseball and golf in the afternoons.
I always feel more refreshed when we fall back, but I think that's just because we get an extra hour. Somehow my circadian rhythm feels like it lines up better with that one. But I will be on your side if it means we can stop with this switching.
Well, that and the shift that we all work also kind of contributes.
I know.
One in the morning does seem a little worse than two in the morning.
I'm going to tell you what. I lived in Phoenix for 5 years before I moved here. They don't move the time. And actually, it's Mountain Standard Time, I think, there. But it's essentially the same, right? Mm-hmm. So they're on the same time as we are right now. So that would be kind of our thing. And it was great. You never had to switch the time. And that's awesome. And that's I agree with what he said there, that I'm tired of switching twice a year. It's a pain. I don't like it either
it's
time.
It's unhealthy, too.
Yes.
Many studies have shown very unhealthy. So, all right, we're going to hope for what's next for this bill?
So this now goes to the Senate, and then there's also the Senate version, which is very similar, that could come up for a vote as well in the next 3 days and still move forward. So we've got a lot of prospects here in our state, and then the timeline as to when Congress could act on this is unclear. We have to get this through the state first, and then it could be quick so we don't have to switch next year, or maybe we have to go through this one more time. I'll keep you posted.
Do the right thing. Thank you, Hannah.
You bet.
It's time for your daily dose of kindness now. A family trip last summer resulted in a bad accident for 12-year-old Haley Chung. She went over a waterfall while on a hike, severed her spine, suffered a skull fracture. Doctors initially told CTV they weren't sure she'd make it, but she did, though she's now paralyzed from the waist down, and getting around her house is tough.
I can't go upstairs now, and it's kind of some areas are really hard to get around because it's so crowded.
But a home builder in her area of Edmonton, Canada, heard about Haley's story and decided right then and there they'd just retrofit her home for free.
So we've got the chairlift installed, all the new flooring done. Her bathroom has been completely revamped, so now she has accessibility through her bedroom.
And now she can finally access her bedroom. It was always on the second floor. Parents either had to carry her up there or she just stayed downstairs. There's a chairlift that brings her there now. Her new bathroom, spacious, easy to get around and using her wheelchair. It was an unexpected gift from complete strangers, just a company with employees who wanted to do something good.
Thank you for helping Haley. Helping us.
And now the family has to raise enough money to get a wheelchair accessible car for the family. They say, though, this help from the home builders has put them ahead of schedule to get into that SUV soon. It's time for our Sports Insider from 710 ESPN Seattle. Brought to you by Western Washington Toyota Dealers. It's Danny O'Neill still soaking up the sun down in Peoria, Arizona. Danny, good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Colleen?
We're good. A little groggy. I understand people down in Arizona don't experience daylight saving, so lucky them.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. They're no longer an hour ahead of us.
Yeah, exactly. Same time. So I hear King Felix will not be the starter. Is this big news or expected?
It's not a total surprise. It had not been made official until, I guess, Friday the team was told, and on Saturday kind of the service addressed it. And yesterday you heard, or Saturday you also heard from King Felix, who's not pleased. He's upset about it, but not surprised. And he's had a tough spring. And in Felix's mind, even if he'd pitched great this spring, he thought Service's mind was made up, that he would not be the opening day starter. So it's only the second time going back to 2007, so that's pretty significant span of time, second time in 13 seasons that he will not start the opener.
It's hard to believe that the first Mariners game of the season is next Wednesday, the 20th. So who will be starting then?
Marco Gonzalez, who is in his second full season with the team. He was acquired midway through the 2017 season. Someone who is not a hard thrower, but someone who has the makeup and mentality that the Mariners really love. And in this offseason, you saw that the faith that Seattle has in both Marco Gonzalez and Mitch Haniger, because those were two up-and-coming players who could have fetched quite a bit in trade value, who they opted to keep. So they believe that he can be a linchpin, a real cornerstone for this team as they try to jumpstart it back into contention maybe as soon as 2021.
Danny, to go back to Felix just a little bit to kind of put a bow on this, I mean, I know what he means to this franchise and what he's meant to this city and this team, but in your mind, is he real? I mean, does he deserve at this stage of his with his game to be even in the top five rotation?
In the words of Snoop from the great urban drama The Wire, "Deserve has got nothing to do with it." No, he doesn't deserve it. He's in the final year of a contract that will pay him $27 million. The reason he is on the team is because he was guaranteed that money. Does he deserve a spot in the rotation? Yes, because you want to see if you can get anything out of that money. And it's not like they're in a situation where he's going to hold them back. They want to see what they can get from him, but he's not assured of finishing the season on the roster for sure. What you have is a player who had a legendary career, a star who is no longer what he once was, and you have a general manager and a manager who were not here for any of those start years. He doesn't have any equity from when he was great. And it's a strained relationship, obviously. I don't think Scott Service and Jerry DePoto believe that he has done everything he can to adjust to his new reality. And I think Felix feels resentful of how they have treated him. So it was an arranged marriage. Jerry DePoto did not negotiate the contract that Felix is on. Scott Service did not advocate giving it to him. It's strained, and the question now is, can Felix pitch well enough to stay in the rotation this season? If he pitches like he did last year, he will not. He will not finish the season with the Mariners.
A lot of chatter over the weekend on Twitter about Frank Clark and a franchise tag and him holding out possibly, like Marshawn and Cam and Earl. What's that all about?
Well, so the Seahawks have placed the franchise tag on Frank Clark. What that means is he's a restricted free agent. Any team that negotiates with him would have to give Seattle two first-round picks if they were going to sign him to a contract. And Seattle would have the right to match it or get those two first-round picks. He's not going to sign anywhere in free agency. That's the upshot of that. And his negotiating tactic at this point is to say, okay, I'm not going to sign the franchise tender. And what that means is he won't be under contract this offseason. And his agent has indicated they've presented it. It's been reported that Frank wouldn't show up to training camp. Now, it wouldn't technically be a holdout because he wouldn't be under contract. He wouldn't be subject to fines or anything like that. But the best way to look at this is the Seahawks have done what they're allowed to do under the NFL rules to maximize their leverage over Frank. Frank is now saying, hey, I also have the right not to show up and train and prepare for the season with you guys. Mm-hmm. And I plan to do that. He's doing what the NFL rules allow him to do to try to maximize the pressure on Seattle.
And just quickly, because we're going to talk about this more in the 8 o'clock hour when Angela Russell joins us, but the U.S. women's soccer team members are suing over gender discrimination. Again, this has to do with pay, equal pay. We've talked about this before, Danny, but remind me of your thoughts on paying women's soccer equal to men's.
Well, I have a lot of thoughts. I think it's an issue that is woven throughout sports. Do we allow free market rules to dictate treatment of athletes? Because if it's free market rules, then you're going to go by how much they earn. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that women's soccer does not have the ratings, not even the ratings, the broadcast contracts. They don't generate the same amount of money as men's soccer. The other thing that I find fascinating is it's the same job. It's the women's national team and the men's national team. And there is difference in pay. There's difference in accommodation. The women's national team has always been one of the leaders in global women's sports for advocating for equality and improved conditions. And in some cases, they've gotten them. They've taken a charter flight to tournaments, something that was unheard of 5 years ago, even though that's fairly standard for men's teams. They haven't played on artificial turf, something that was a major complaint that they didn't even have the same facilities. They haven't played on one of those since 2017, so there have been improvements. Do I think that women should get equal pay, the women's national team should get equal pay to men? Yes, I do. But I think that anyone who answers that should also look at college sports, because a lot of the same people that will say women should get equal pay as men would say that college athletes need to be paid. And those two things are incompatible, because either you're going to let free market economics dictate athletics and how much they're paid, or we're going to have some of the rules that, about equality that are in place.
All right. Thank you, Danny. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Sound good.